Yes, I in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Roscosmos, congratulations. Ungara flies. This is Hotel Mars Episode N. David Livingston, Dr. Space, is my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome our colleague, Anatoly Zak of the Russian Space Web, a subscription site I recommend to everyone, because Vostochny, Ungara, and the Russian plans for orbit and for the moon and beyond are reawakened with the launch of the Ungara system. Anatoly, congratulations to everyone at Roscosmos. Given the strains on the Russian budget these last years, this is a miracle achieved at Vostochny, the new spaceport that's been building for years. What is Ungara? What is its mission? Good evening to you, Anatoly.
Hello, John. So Ungara project, which has been going on for almost 30 years by now, so it's a new generation launch vehicle for the Russian space program for multi-purpose, first of all, military purposes, but also for it was conceived as a multi-purpose vehicle for human space flight, for launching crews, and also for commercial space flight for payloads to deliver into so-called geostationary orbit, where which is very convenient for communication satellites. So it's a I kind of identify three main jobs for it: the military, commercial, and human space flight. But also, of course, the science and other applications as well. And again, the rocket was in development for a number of years. It got the launch pad first at the military launch site in Plesetsk, very very far north, which was very important for the Russian military. But it's not very well suited geographically for all other launches. It's actually for any launches. It was built for strategic military purposes first. So they started a few years ago in another launch complex in Vostochny, in the Russian Far East, very close to the Pacific Ocean. And that goal of that site was to actually improve the capability of the rocket, because the further you are to the south, you need to be, basically every space rocket wants to be as close as possible to the equator, because the rotation of the Earth helps to with launches. And if you farther away from the equator, you lose more mass. So they were building that launch site and finally completed it at the beginning of this year. And the first launch, after two delays for 24 hours, two times, took place on April 11. The vehicle carried primarily dummy cargo, not a real satellite, but there were two small experimental satellites which we know of, which were deployed successfully. And in general, the performance of the vehicle was believed to be good.
David, you have a question.
Anatoly, is there a game plan to seek foreign customers for commercial markets like Proton and some of their other rockets? Are they going to be marketing this to foreign entities, foreign companies?
So originally, there was exactly that plan. And one of the reasons that they were building this launch pad, that they, instead of this military site in Plesetsk, they hope to put commercial customers. They had very good, again, situation for this from the technical standpoint. But now, because of the Russian political isolation, it's for the past 2 years due to war in Ukraine, which they started in 2022, it's practically impossible for them simply to win any customers. Because, of course, Russia is Roscosmos itself. Many of their companies are under sanctions, and all the customers essentially left. So this is actually a major problem for the entire Russian space program and for the Ungara project in particular. So because they, with the law, of course, as we know, a rocket needs to fly, every rocket system, it needs, as more it flies, the more customers it has. So essentially, if you lose a big chunk of the market and big chunk of the customers, it's much harder to make the system economically feasible. So until Russia changes behavior and returns into the civilized world, it's very hard to imagine that they will get anybody at all for this type of vehicle.
The vehicle has strap-on boosters, and it's very flexible about how much it can lift. What is its maximum lift possibility, and is there a booster in the U.S. fleet that matches what Ungara can do? Can you give us an analogy for its lift?
Yes, so architecturally, Angara was designed to replace the Proton, which is the Soviet era rocket, which was operational for many, many years after the fall of the Soviet Union. But it was using toxic propellants, which is kind of leftover from the military use. It was storable propellants, which are very toxic if they spill. So the goal was to switch to kerosene fuel, which is very similar to kind of aviation fuel, and liquid oxygen, which is used as an oxidizer as a pair for kerosene. So Angara did exactly that. And the assignment was, the kind of design was to match Proton. And that is between 22 and 24 tons to the lowest orbit available. So around, let's say, 250, 300 kilometers. This rocket can designed, let's put it this way, they still kind of calculating what exact mass it will be. But the goal, the purpose of the vehicle is to deliver 24 tons of cargo. And it's, I think, I don't know how it compares. It's probably similar in class, a little bit bigger than the Falcon 9, which is kind of most common right now American launcher. It's within the same class of launch vehicles. And Angara, it's also designed. It has an upper stage, which is designed to fly from the initial parking orbit, which is, like I said, 250. 300 kilometers, it can push payload to elliptical orbit, so-called the egg-shaped orbit, or to circular geostationary orbit. That's where most of the communication satellites right now located. So it's, again, multi-purpose vehicle. And also there is a goal to launch a crew vehicle, which is expected to be around 20 tons in mass, which will carry up to 4 people on board. And that spacecraft will service the future Russian space station, which they want to build after the International Space Station retires. And that's the goal again. And it's, again, same vehicle. And it will be launching from that new launch site, which they just built, because, again, launching from Plesetsk, due to its military nature, is not really viable.
David?
So that's the general idea.
David?
How are they paying for all of this, given the Ukrainian war, and do they even think about reusability for their rockets?
They do think, but let's be honest, they don't do much at this point. They have on paper, they have a design which would allow to actually return the first and second stage as a single cluster, because the way Angara is structured, it has a so-called core stage, which is one big rocket, and there are four boosters which are kind of strapped on each side of this central core. So they developed the system on paper. Again, it's right now only as a drawing, as a design. So that those strap-on boosters will remain to attach to the core, and they will separate together from the upper stage, and then they will go and land, and they will have sort of deployable legs similar to Falcon 9, similar like SpaceX is doing right now. And theoretically, that system could be made reusable. But again, the key situation here is they need many customers. They need many, many satellites in order to make this kind of commercially feasible and kind of economically viable, which they do not at this point. And in a foreseeable future, there is no such thing. So essentially, this idea exists on paper, but I do not believe it would be implemented in the near, let's say, 2-3 years, unless, again, we have big political changes in Russia, which, of course, we all hope will happen. But at this point, it's hard to speculate.
Angara has flown, so we move to the dreams of Roscosmos, and Anatoly has done us the historian's hard work of reaching back to the 1960s, when I was a lad watching space launches, and introducing us to the L3M project. This is a moon project for the Soviets. What was it, Anatoly? What was the mission?
So this is extremely kind of interesting page in space history, which is not very well read by even historians, let alone by general public. So L3M was kind of successor to the failed L3 project, which, as we know, was an attempt by the Soviet Union to put the cosmonaut ahead of the Apollo astronauts on the surface of the moon. And of course, that failed because Apollo 11 managed to get there first. And then, of course, the Russian engineers were seeking for kind of to find a way how to continue their lunar program, because the political foundation of this whole project kind of disappeared with NASA doing it first. And they came up with the idea, essentially, which was kind of formulated even before Apollo 11 landed on the moon. They said, how about we will do lunar expedition, which is much more expressive, impressive than what Apollo 11 and subsequent missions did. So essentially, the idea was to outshine, kind of outperform Apollo big time. For example, to put astronauts not for 3-4 days on the surface of the moon, but actually be on the moon for a week, months, or even to build a permanent base. And the L3M project did exactly that. Of course, again, on a drawing board, they were designing the spacecraft, which is much larger than original lunar module, and in fact, much larger than Apollo spacecraft, which landed first two people on the moon. And the idea was, again, to build the enough hardware, powerful enough, to land main spacecraft, the additional modules with the provisions and all the scientific hardware, and eventually to build permanent lunar base. So it was kind of first very serious attempt in the Soviet Union to develop permanent exploration of the moon. And the project was eventually folded as well, and it's remained kind of secret for many, many decades. And only now we're getting kind of detailed, kind of original documentation, archival designs and all of this, which was kind of hidden for many, many decades. And we kind of learned details how Soviet engineers and Soviet strategists kind of designed and saw it, how to do this type of stuff.
David?
Did they never got to any testing on it? It was all conceptual and design work, 100%?
Not necessarily, because remember that they've done a lot of development work for the L3, which was kind of predecessor project. So this L3M, and M means modified, it was essentially based on technology which they were already testing and flying. For example, N1, this giant moon rocket, which of course flew 4 missions, all of them unsuccessfully, but L3M was based on exactly same hardware. So essentially, if it continued, if they, you know, had political will and if they had money, they actually would have a lot of hardware already developed and available for L3M as well. So they were still a few years away from actually flying actual crew to the lunar surface. But they still had a huge kind of heritage, technological heritage, which was available to them. And also, of course, they also made a lot of designs which are kind of still relevant today. Because if, for example, tomorrow or after tomorrow we decide to go to the moon and build a lunar base, many of the designs which are kind of developed at that time, they are very instrumental and very kind of teachable, very important for future generations as well.
We're speaking with Anatoly Zak, a space historian. He keeps the Russian space web about Roscosmos and its present accomplishments and its past ambitions when it was the Soviet state. And then there was a period where it was a Soviet state, but it was working with NASA. And it's important to remember those days because they'll come back. Everything's in a cycle. So when we come back, we're going to turn to Soyuz 7KTM variant, a project that was meant to be a demonstration of living side by side the Soviet state and America in the 1970s. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.